This is another Horus Avengers Follow the White Rabbit, and this should be Follow the White Rabbit, I believe, 81. And we're here today with Beefcake from Beefcake's Boot Camp. There's a tongue twister. And we're going to talk about machine gun versus sniper rifle. Impractical politics. Whether or not the machine gun is better than the sniper rifle. And it's not an obvious answer, because you guys are walking into a society that most of you have never been in. Me and Beefcake have a distinct advantage. Beefcake was deployed at one time to the Middle East, and he knows exactly what we're walking into. I grew up around a bunch of Muslims in a place in Western civilization with a lot of Muslims, and I know exactly how this stuff works. I don't know exactly how it would work in a white country in the early 21st century like America, but I have a very good idea of the direction we're going here. And again, this is another Follow the White Rabbit. And go ahead, Beefcake. Let's hear what you have to say.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Yeah, I noticed there was a big culture difference when I was in the Middle East, when I was in Iraq, and I was in between 2004 and 2005. And I've noticed our dialogue here has been changing a lot. I mean, what we're doing right now is we're changing the way people talk about race. I mean, that's really a big part of what we're doing, and of course, getting out the message of white genocide. And as far as the culture changing as well, you know, one thing can flip in an instant. Everybody can be singing one tune, and then of course, you play the right note, that harmonics. You know, and next thing you know, something changes, and this part isn't necessarily just coming from us, but essentially, what you've mentioned before in a number of podcasts is that fall of Zionism. Well, a big thing is going to be a lot of very anti-Zionist memes coming out, and all of a sudden people turning around the next day and it's popular to be anti-Semitic. And yeah. I just said that. You go to a Middle Eastern country and that's right. What you got.
I've seen this coming for years simply because of what I call the Dearborn, Michigan factor. If you grow up around a lot of Muslims, let me give you a real scenario. A family coming from the Lebanon, they don't want to necessarily live in America, but they've had their homes destroyed in Lebanon. They were offered an opportunity to immigrate, so they migrate here. They do quite well. They build a business, whatever. They try to go back to Lebanon. They build a house not once, not twice, but five, and in some instances, I know of six different times, and have property destroyed in wars and stuff like that. You're probably not going to be too friendly towards Zionism or anything associated with that, most certainly not anything Jewish. In fact, there's overt anti-Semitism among Muslims, of course, is out of control, mostly because of the actions of the Jewish elites, the Zionists, the State of Israel. You know the score. Anyone can watch it. They're pissed off. Now, in America, post-September 11, 2001, they've been a little more quiet if they don't know you, but it was pretty ridiculous. I mean, all the enemies are always identified as a Jew. Everything in power is a Jew. Everything's a Jewish conspiracy. You hear the Anti-Defamation League talk about Jewish conspiracy, the Muslim world. You guys have no idea. It's way more outrageous than the threat on Stormfront or something.
And I think they'd make the Stormfronters blush.
They would.
I've heard some funny things.
Yeah, everything is like a Jewish conspiracy. But that is the type of society we're walking into right now, because in America, I don't know if you just woke up, but when it comes to Hollywood, when it comes to things like the Federal Reserve, when it comes to these overt positions, there's a lot of Jews there in the media, a lot of Jews in front of everyone's face in some of these different areas, financial markets, at Goldman Sachs. You get the picture, and there's a lot of memes that have been seeded, and this stuff is just exploding. You can see it on Twitter. We typically, we just had an incident on Bugs where one individual thought someone was married to a Jewish fellow. Apparently, she isn't married to a Jewish fellow. As best I know, as best anyone knows, that it all ends up not being true. But this is the type of thing that becomes commonplace in the Muslim world. Like, for instance, there's the big conspiracy is that the House of Saud is actually Jewish. I actually would buy into that. They'd probably move into Israel tomorrow morning if they wanted to with a genetic test or something. But this is the type of thing that is commonplace. You know, if someone's an enemy, there's a Jew. They're a Jew. And this has been commonplace in some pro-white circles for some time as well. But that type of thing is overt and goes mainstream very easily for reasons beyond anyone's control. Anti-Semitism.
I wanted to add something to that as well, Horst, that of course, you know, we know everything comes back to getting control of the message. And one thing that you'll hear a lot of people talk about is how, you know, there are a lot of very influential Jews in media that do put out some very anti-white messages. That's one of the reasons a lot of pro-whites don't really like Jews very much, is simply because a lot of Jews say some very anti-white things. What we've noticed as far as the Muslims, the Arabs that are living in a lot of places now, is that they too have been trying to get a hold of this message. They have been networking to get people into media. They have been networking to get a lot of their people into our universities. So all of a sudden we're seeing on a lot of university campuses in the United States already the animosity showing up between the Muslim and Jewish faculty.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, the anti-Zionism stuff, the pro-Palestinian is what it's behind. And the Jews are right when they say something about anti-Zionism can be anti-Semitism, or it is. In cases of Muslims, I don't care what they say, that's probably the truth. Because of the actions, you know, anti-Semitism comes from Semitism by and large. It's the actions of the State of Israel. there could be no doubt about that. There's a connection there. And it's just what it is. I mean, if you had six houses destroyed and you had to move to another country, and, you know, because of what you blame as the actions of a state of Israel, well, you're obviously going to be pissed off about it. That's just the way things go. The Palestinian situation, that's an ongoing festering wound, so on, so forth, etc.
And as you said before, you know, anything with any message that works is usually done for what is sort of an eighth grade thinking level.
Yeah. Yeah, this type of thing has a mind of its own. We use a very broad term for the enemy. I call it machine gunning, carpet bombing. We call all the enemy anti-white. It covers pretty much anything. Pink rabbits. Now, I of course, the pink rabbits have the have an interesting eye, because it's, you know, if you look at the pink rabbit motif, you're going to see a little interesting thing in its eyes. I don't hold back when it comes to the Codenhove Kalergi, the Barbara Lerner Spectres, the Tim Weiss. I just don't hold back in calling them out under their double standards or whatever. I find in a machine gun strategy, you have to be able to handle everything coming down the pipeline, and a lot of anti-whites that you're going to be face-to-face with are, generally speaking, Jewish. You can't really back down over that. They don't back down over it, so I don't see any reason why we should. What typically the pro-white side, of course, likes to use a sniping term. Let's just call everyone a Jew. It's a sniping term, but what's interesting, where I grew up, in some areas, it basically was a machine gun term. In places like Iraq, where you were, Beefcake, everyone that's an enemy is a Jew.
I suppose I could tell a quick funny story about my first experience there, understanding how this stuff happens. We hadn't been in country a real long time. We had gotten there, and we were getting used to the area we were in. And as far as that goes, you know, if you have an infantry unit that is going to be occupying a certain area, everyone has their own sector, and our leadership wanted to get a hold of the leadership in the communities. Because in any community, especially when you have a war-torn country and people kind of congregate together, you're always going to have sort of one guy who's in charge of any area of those people, or everyone comes to when they have a problem. So my platoon sergeant was going to go have a conversation with this guy, and they talked together for probably 3-4 hours. And I remember my platoon sergeant came back and told us, you know, what his conversation was. I just heard the longest theory about how our entire occupation over here is due to a Jewish conspiracy, as was September 11th, and pretty much anything bad that's happened in the world in the last 100 years. I just listened to a guy completely explain how Jews are behind all of it. And that's all this guy talked to him about was this guy wanted to go on and on about Jews. That is what this guy wanted to talk about for a long time. And that was, you know, and then over time, over the year there, I realized that, you know, that, yeah, if you have a conversation with a lot of Iraqis, if there's a phantom bad guy, unless it's something missing, that they'll blame on Alibaba. But if there's something bad happening in the world, they're pretty consistent at telling you who's behind it.
Yeah, it's the Jews. It's all the Jews. Yeah, this type of thing has a mind of its own once it winds up. It usually has a basis in reality, and then it just takes off and gets out of control. And that's what's happening. There is no way to get around it or control it. You know, you can just acknowledge it, and that's it. When it comes down to white genocide, of course, they're the pink rabbits that's always bouncing in the room. They're the devil behind the curtains all the time to most pro-whites. And I think there's actually somewhat of a generational thing. I've been asked a question, and I'll comment on it, and then you can comment on it. And the question is, Tom Metzger's very famous in pro-white circles, and Tom Metzger and Bob apparently agree on one thing. Traitors are a bigger problem, if not bigger, than the Jews. Bob always says, you know, I can't blame the Jews for being Jews. You know, they have an alien loyalty. They go by the Talmud, that type of thing. Okay, they're just doing what they're supposed to do based on their book and based on their faith. Traitors, on the other hand, Aryan traitors, white anti-whites, we like to call them, they're a totally different bill of goods. You know, you can't really justify cutting them any slack. And apparently, these guys that have been around for decades and decades out have seen a lot of problems with white anti-white traitors. I've seen all of the above myself with white anti-white traitors, but as well as the other side of the equation, the SPLC type, Abe Foxy Foxman's types. I've seen it all since doing the particular podcast. But it could be generational to answer that question. Bob definitely feels that way. Tom Metzger, if he feels that way too, which I think I've heard him speak to some extent about these traitors we have. You know, in the end, I'll talk a little bit about my particular theory on that. It's pretty interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with using a sniper phrase. The downside with it is that you can go to jail in Europe for talking about Jews. You know, you can't go to jail for calling all the enemy anti-whites. You can't go to jail for that in Europe. In America, you wouldn't go to jail for either. The downside is talking about when you use the term like a machine gun phrase and just use, you know, anti-white to blanket everybody, is that you pretty much have to be able to handle any particular group in front of your face. And somewhere like America where you have free speech, you need to be able to handle that, in my mind, at least. Generally speaking, I don't have to go into too much. I think the difference is that most pro-whites on these particular websites are dedicated, with a few different exceptions, are dedicated to extensive education. We're dedicated to something else. You want to pick up the slack on that, Beefcake?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I wanted to say, too, when you mentioned that, I mean, we're dedicated to the preservation of our own people in the face of genocide, you know, getting this message out. People need to know about it. It's the, you know, worst run conspiracy in the world. But one thing that we're doing is changing, what I wanted to say is how someone addresses it when somebody comes out and, you know, calls them an anti-Semite, or someone is trying to snipe you while you're doing the carpet bombing. You know, someone, if you're painting anti-whites with a broad brush, you're still going to deal with the fact that anti-whites are going to come out, and you mentioned this on one of your recent podcasts, they're going to come right out and ask you, are you a Semite, like Bob Whitaker, or some loaded question. Are you an anti-Semite? Yeah, they'll come out and throw the loaded question at you. And how you answer that, you know, is like you mentioned the direct method. You know, go right in and say, well, if Zionist elites agree with the anti-white proposition, and if I disagree with them, that makes me an anti-Semite, then yes, I'm an anti-Semite.
Yeah, I say something a lot shorter. I say, yes, I am an anti-Semite. You know, anyone that disagrees, this is what I've told others, say anyone that disagrees with the Jewish elites is an anti-Semite. You know, and you can spin it either way. And people are starting to realize this. They've overused the term because the vast majority of people that yell anti-Semite at aren't. Just because you're criticizing foreign policy moves by the neocons doesn't make you an anti-Semite. I mean, these are hardly rabid Jew haters, most of the people online are criticizing this. But if you keep calling them anti-Semite, sooner or later, you know, you end up with the M&M proposition. I am whatever you say I am. And that's the danger of it. They've overplayed
the insult loses its power over time. Now,
all it takes is one person to wear the label, and it's over with. In fact, there was a time in Europe where there would be huge anti-Semitic societies.
my question is how to handle that situation if you are in a country where wearing the label of anti-Semite can get you put in jail. You know, I don't want to see any pro-whites go to jail for it, but could they say something like, "Do you have to be an anti-Semite to have a problem with white genocide?"
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I would generally just say, you know, anyone that disagrees with Zionism, you label an anti-Semite or something like that. I would cloak it behind Zionism or something. Anyone that disagrees, it depends on really the country. In Germany, you can't really answer it almost at all. Somewhere like Italy, you could say anyone that disagrees with Zionism, you yell anti-Semite. You know, as soon as I disagree with Zionism or disagree with you, you yell anti-Semite. I would never answer the question directly at all. In America, I can get away with doing things a dissident in Europe cannot get away with. A dissident in somewhere like the UK can't get away with. If you say I am a racist in the UK, funny things can happen to you.
Yeah, and that's my one concern, you know, is just for people, if they're gonna wear the anti-white, I mean, if anti-whites are giving you the label and you're gonna wear the label of anti-Semite, just make sure you're familiar with the laws in your country so we don't want to see anyone on message going to jail because they allowed someone to call them a name.
Typically, you want to put on the broken record strategy and just say anyone that disagrees with Jewish supremacism, you call is an anti-Semite to you. You know, you call anyone an anti-Semite that disagrees with Jewish supremacism or disagrees with Zionism. And you just got to say it over and over again. You can't, I mean, well, they're asking you a loaded question. They're trying to get you thrown in jail or something like that. But typically, I don't think most listeners will have this problem. With one exception, right now we're going into like a Dearborn, Michigan type strategy, an Iraq type strategy where everything is going to be about the Jews. What you're seeing on Twitter right now is pretty insane across the board. And 60 months from now, and I'll make a prediction because there was a time when no one really, you know, the word anti-white, people don't understand is a century old. It's not something Bob Whitaker created. It's a century old, at least. We seeded the meme like no tomorrow from late 2009, mid-2009 to currently. And the object of seeding a meme is to impose terminology. Our particular task was a little bit difficult because terminology had already been illegitimately imposed by an alien group. They imposed a terminology called racist. They've imposed other alien terminologies like anti-Semite. You see, someone doesn't have to impose ideology with all these smokes and mirrors. You can impose ideology just through imposing terminology. In fact, the art of political warfare is imposing your terminology on the enemy. By imposing terminology, you actually, point of fact, impose ideology. Before you ever put under some insane white genocide system, the multiculturalism, the diversity is our strength bullshit, before that ever happened, someone put you under alien terminology. It's that simple. Terminology precedes ideology. The question was always, do we have the media power to impose terminology? Can you use it? And what I mean, how do we know when someone's imposed terminology? You know, because someone says, I'm not a racist, but. They always say that. I'm not a racist, but. When you've imposed terminology, they act like little school children. That's it. They've been taken to school. But what we are looking for, and what you're seeing on Twitter, I've tweeted this out numerous times, but you were starting to see it over and over again. I'm not an anti-white, but that's what we're looking for. We're looking for imposing terminology. That's the whole objective. It's the beginning.
It becomes a part of everyday speech too. After a while, where pretty much anyone can start defending themselves in their race by saying that, you know, how this affects white people is very anti-white.
Our job's not as simple as walking around the playground yelling racist. We got to go in, disengage it, and reinsert our terminology over their subversive terminology. We basically got to use the truth against the darkness, if you will. You know, obviously, you know, calling white people racist is hilarious. If we were racist, we wouldn't have immigration problems. We wouldn't have any problems we
right,
have.
Right, yeah, we're the meanest people in the world to live with, yet we need to let everybody else live with us because to not do so would mean we're bad.
Right, right. That's one of the reasons I've used extensively. I've been asked another question while we're on the subject. Why we don't use anti-racism equals anti-white. I've used it more than anyone you've ever heard talk. I used it for over a year, maybe even 2 years straight. It doesn't impose terminology fast enough is what we found out. The code word stuff, the anti-racism was a code word for anti-white, seems a little bit odd at first. It seems a little bit out of the ordinary. It imposes terminology at a much faster rate. It means it seeds the meme anti-white in place of racist so fast that when Tim Weiss writes an article about Bob Whitaker and the mantra, he calls him every name but a racist. That's been someone's taking you to school when you do that. But we're looking for people to say, I'm not anti-white, but we're looking for people to say, you know, either come out and say they support white genocide, which is kind of funny, or that's happening, or saying, well, this isn't white genocide. We're looking for them to try to get around it, kind of like, well, this isn't really racism, kind of like the pro-whites of old or the so-called right-wingers, the conservatives of old would do. Try to explain their way out of it, because if you're always arguing a position that always puts us in a world without any white people, sooner or later someone's going to go hashtag white genocide and make it stick. And so that's what we're looking to do. This is the beginning. It's just the point of programming was when they made it impossible for the average white guy or gal to defend themselves verbally. And we're basically going in and giving them something to say. It's the basic.
Yeah, we're changing the way everybody talks about race. You know, when it comes up, it says, you know, a lot of the pro-whites a long time ago, and I'm sure you were around then too, and they talked about everything else besides white genocide, besides anti-whites. You know, the conversation is very, very different than it is now, where now, you know, there are a lot more conversations taking place about the mass immigration and forced integration. They're on the attack now. They're accusing a group, anti-whites, traitors of treason.
Anti-whites are on the defensive big time. They're on the defensive. So that's a little bit of difference between the machine gun strategy and the sniper strategy. Calling everyone a Jew that's our enemy, I've been around that. It didn't surprise me when this episode happened at Bugs because that's the type of society you're in. It's nothing to run from. It's a little bit scary at first, but it's a totally different world. It's going to be rather interesting. Now, of course, the question always came into is, do we have enough media power online to impose terminology? Well, we can't impose terminology like Fox News. We can't seed memes with the rate of Fox News. You're not going to be able to say Israel is the greatest democracy in the Middle East or the only democracy in the Middle East and have it stick by having a half a dozen people say it on Fox News night and day. We don't have that type of power. But with pretty good numbers, and with sheer force, you can seed memes over the internet. That's what we've done. All you got to do is look up anti-white. All you got to do is look up white genocide on somewhere like Twitter, where we're allowed to run around for any length of time without being censored, and it's game over. Yeah, you have enough media power online to seed memes. There's no doubt about that. The Jew thing is already cooked. The Zionism thing is already cooked. We want to make sure all the traitors get thrown in the pot. In other words, I mean that ship is sailing. It's game over for whatever game the Zionists think they're running, whatever game the Jewish supremacist thing is, you can stick a fork in it. It's done. 60 months from now, it will be absolutely Jew everything, Jew all the time. It'll be like Dearborn, Michigan or Iraq. It's going
to
be.
I just want to make sure that the traitors are not left off the hook. And I wanted to say too that, you know, there have been, and this is something that we had a conversation, it wasn't recorded a while back, but you mentioned there have been many ancient civilizations that we have a lot of evidence that they had white people there. They're not there anymore, and this was before Jews ever existed. And so, you know, traitors can destroy you no matter who else doesn't like you. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. You know, if people want to talk about Jews do this, Jews do that, well, who let them in the first place? And by the way, there are people that have, to my knowledge, no connection with Jews that have been certainly party to flooding large areas of white people with non-whites. I know in the state that I live in Minnesota, that there's an organization known as Catholic Charities that they had a guy that helped invite over and help do something to ensure that a whole ton of Somalis would be brought into the area.
Right.
And this guy apparently owned a whole bunch of rental complexes in some of the areas and knew that this would be a great way to support his own business. And of course you have, there's always somebody who's willing to sell out their own people to make a quick buck. Somebody who's worried about the right now and is entirely indifferent to the future. There's a whole line of thinking,
Beefcake, that says that the Jews provide the structure. If it wasn't for them, this wouldn't be happening. But there are plenty of ancient societies that browned out that didn't have any Jews around. But of course, none of the people that talk about the Jews incessantly, especially like the Arabs or even the populations, the Shia Muslim, they can't really define a Jew. No one on storefront, you know, you want to get into a fight. This is one of the reasons I just use the machine gun anti-white strategy. The biggest fights I've ever seen among pro-whites are over who's a Jew or what's a Jew, and actually technically define one. It can be a pretty big brawl. I've never seen anyone brawl over who's an anti-white. It's pretty simple.
Anti-whites is focusing on their behavior. You know, if you behave in an anti-white way, we're going to call you anti-white, regardless of what you look like.
Exactly.
I can't be anti-white. I am white. I'm whiter than Snow White. I can't be anti-white.
Yeah.
Well, what do you call somebody who hates their own people? You know, that's really simple. If someone hates their own people, that is a traitor.
Right. The key point to understand, though, is for the Bugsers to understand what type of society you're walking into, because that's what you're seeing on Twitter. It's going to be out of control. There's nothing you're going to do about it. It's okay. Just stay on message. It's Semitism and some of these crazy acts by the Jewish elites cause a reaction. Our job is to cast the widest net possible, and we do that with machine gun strategy. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions when it comes to white genocide. There's when it comes down to the Immigration Act of, let's say, 1965, you know, Dr. Kevin McDonald has pretty much proven who's behind that. Yeah, sorry. Lock, stock, two smoking barrels. The ones pushing for it are all Jews. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but we know what's overt in front of our face. Teddy Kennedy pushed it through, but by and large, everyone behind it, the Hart-Celler Act and all that kind of stuff like that, I'm not here to do a history lesson, but, you know, they're pretty much Jewish. And that's one of the challenges, is when someone walks into this, they look at this, and the Barbara Lerner Spectres, the Codenhof Kalerges, are really the only ones I ever get answered about. But our particular technique is a little bit different, even going back to Bob's book, Why Johnny Can't Think. You got chapter after chapter of different Jewish names, but Bob doesn't come out and start educating a la David Duke on the Jewish question or anything like that. In anti-racist Hitler, we use Barbara Lerner Spectre, but in no way, shape, manner, or form am I trying to educate in the traditional sense. It's not some big tour de force on the Jewish question. That's someone else's ballywick. That's not my particular job. It's just standalone for what it is. Although I do know there are people that use anti-racist Hitler to let people watch and they educate them on who Barbara Lerner Spectre is. That's not my particular function. Bugs is not here to educate on black crime stats or the Jewish question. We're here to get out seed memes like white genocide, seed memes like anti-white. That's what we've been doing with a viciousness. And everything else comes after that, in our opinion.
We make connections for people, and we also help, you know, demonstrate how people can make connections. It's not so much giving people new information. It's making some very simple connections between stuff that they're already familiar with. And as far as people educating about, you know, which people that are anti-white that are very vocal about this, the Jewish elites that do support this, there are plenty of people that have been on that message for a long time and are still on it. But the thing that, you know, still needs more attention brought to it is white genocide itself. And the thing is, we paint that with a broad brush. Who's doing it? Because obviously people are going to say, who's responsible for this? Who's supporting this? We say anti-white, and there's plenty of people willing to make more specific connections for them than that. Than beyond just naming, you know, saying Jewish elites or anything like that, can actually give you names of people that have really been putting it out. But you know, when doing that carpet bombing, you're looking for getting all the anti-whites. You're throwing out the net to get the most fish in it as possible.
Yeah, we're coming off a different angle and using a term anti-white that hasn't been seeded in a century. So we have a lot of that going for us. The problem that I always find, you know, right at one time, maybe one out of several thousand would understand it when you talked about Jews or black crime stats. Now the rate is maybe one out of 100. We see a lot more opportunities, and the reason is the basics. It takes 15 to 20 years to brainwash a nation. That's how long it takes to put a nation underneath one new textbooks, one system of propaganda, so on and so forth. It takes that long to undo that. The internet has pretty much done that. The internet from 95 to 2014 is what? If you take 95, the AOL worldwide nets, you're roughly 1920. You're right on top of things. So you can, as I talked to Lana Lochteff over Red Ice, you can start educating, but that's not our particular function. You'll see people are more interested in reading certain books. You're going to see people wanting that type of thing. I usually just hand out a book or tell them what websites they're interested in some particular information. We don't serve that particular function. I think you can try to do too much in this. But there are a lot of pro-whites that think their mission is just to educate the white masses. Good luck with that.
But they can make connections that are very simple. You know, yeah. a simple connection is that anti-white proposition. That anti-whites feel there can be no all-white countries anywhere in the world, nor any all-white areas left. And now in some countries, they don't want any all-white families left.
Well, that's
that's the end goal anyway. You know,
eventually,
you have less and less white kids being born. But that's the simple result of mass immigration and forced integration targeted at one specific group of people that destroys that people over time. That is genocide. And now this is very simple. This isn't something that we need long drawn education about. This is making a very real connection that people can see in their day-to-day lives. Anyone white who's living in an area that has been flooded with non-whites can easily go to the grocery store and see the problem staring them in the face, even after they just spent the last 15 minutes PWNing pro-white online for pointing out that evil message about white genocide, and they're so angry they said it. You know, the first stage of the con, the getting angry at the person who just told you you've been conned, they can rant about that for a long time, but then they go to the store and they have to leave their house to do any sort of business during the day, and what are they going to see getting rubbed in their face?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Bugs, you know, White Rabbit Radio Bugs, we're basically about seeding memes. And I'm always looking at what appeals to the most. I'm not interested in speaking to choirs. I've never been interested in speaking to choirs. I think that's wonderful, but even the alt news spin, that's the biggest audience online. It's going to be passe for, I know there's a famous young hacktivist. Well, I don't know how young he is, but his name is Weave, or that's what he goes by, W-E-E-V, and he followed me on Twitter. I followed him back, and he's an interesting character, and he wrote an article for over Daily Stormer, but he's going to be the norm. That's going to be the famous anti-Semites. Now, he's basically a National Socialist, an Odinist, ad National Socialist, but this is going to be pretty much the avant-garde thing. That's pretty much the way it's going. If you have problems with that, you're going to have a very tough life. It doesn't have anything. It's nothing good or, well, actually, it's nothing bad for Bugs at all. It's nothing bad for White Rabbit Radio. You just had to recognize. I recognized it long ago in the research we got a hold of what to talk about. I mean, if you see what works on television, what captivates people on television, it's anything to do with Nazis. I mean, it just sells. I don't know what the fascination is. I guess the fact that you have a white population that has had basically white genocide justified and poured down their throats because of World War II. And the Holocaust and all that kind of stuff like that. So this, the polar opposite is occurring, you know.
Well, we're right at that spot on the calendar. As you said, the 15 years, you know, that has passed, and we've got a new media out there. The old media is decaying.
Yeah, the internet is far more radical of a meme generator than anything else.
I don't think our enemy's that good at using it either. You know, they'll come out with these hit pieces and stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised if the only people that read it were the swarmers.
Yeah, well, that's true. It's true. It's hard to say, but the thing that the Bugsers need to understand and everyone else is that you're walking into a Dearborn, Michigan or Iraq situation where everyone's going to be a Jew, all the enemies are going to be Jews, and it's going to be kind of funny. I think this the anti-white, the mantra stuff works because we come on an interesting angle where you can become hurt is not understanding the underlying trends or where you're at. I mean, if you're stuffed in some liberal city, which is a microcosm in America that's going to be the last ones to get a clue to what's really going on, you're pretty much going to get the boom lowered on you and be ineffective. And, of course, it doesn't mean you're ever going to have to walk into a situation and immediately start educating on the Jews. Far from it. I never have to do that at all. I've only ever been asked about Barbara Lerner Specter and Coudenhove Kalergi to do with white genocide. At the same time, you're going to have a lot of people reading David Duke's Jewish Supremacism, The Culture of Critique, a lot of people reading the tweets of Weave as he tweets out anti-Semitic stuff, so on and so forth, etc. That's the way it's going to go. And, I mean, some audiences, I think, by and large, when you start dealing with, and everyone's got them in their family, the typical Christian type Zionist or someone that has some fascination with Israel, you're better off coming off an angle of approach for the first so many times you talk to them into anti-white. Sooner or later, they'll realize that the vast majority of the anti-whites, you were always dealing with a Tim Weiss type situation or a Barbara Lerner Specter, and they end up being Jewish. But that takes some amount of time undoing that particular type of programming. And in my belief, only a certain percentage can be undone.
Yeah, there's a lot of damage that's been done, but you know, as you said before, it's changing. 16 months from now, we can have, you know, everything's a Jew. You know, the whole issue, and this is what I remember I was going to say before, why I spaced something earlier, is that a lot of people, an idea becomes mutually inclusive with another idea. And so, you know, people can talk about how bad Zionism is, and that you know, it's Jewish supremacism or Zionist supremacism or whatnot. But to the normal person walking down the street, where most propaganda is best suited to, you know, that eighth grade thinking level, they are not going to be able to, in their mind, separate Zionism from Jews. It's not going to happen. So you can have Zionism go down, and you can have it get a very bad reputation.
Or even the State of Israel could be destroyed.
It could be. And the thing is, when Zionism becomes unpopular, it's going to be popular for every bad guy out there named to be called a Jew. This is what it is like in a Muslim country.
We're in that time. I mean, it's one of these cycles that you just can't do anything about. But
it's happened before. Yeah, and the other thing too is that a lot of the things that were tied to a lot of the conditioning and programming people have had. You know, a long time ago, white people couldn't talk about race at all. You know, anytime anyone brought it up, everyone would be sort of sticking their head down like they wanted to avoid it or get away from it. Now, a lot of people are, especially the younger generations, are much more comfortable talking about race, even if they're saying something anti-white or something, they're saying something great about another race or whatever. The point is they're talking about it and they feel comfortable talking about racial differences again. That's something else I noticed. And I don't know if that's going to come as quickly as the anti-Zionist and the calling everyone a Jew thing is coming down the pipe at us. But one thing I know is that they'll be much more comfortable talking about race in general. And in dealing with Muslims, they have no problem talking about different racial features, blonde hair and blue eyes. A lot of them admire it, you know, and they have no problem talking about it.
Because they've all read Mein Kampf.
and they also don't seem to have any problem with having conversations. If you were to have a conversation with a Muslim about white genocide, a lot of them have no problem agreeing to what you're saying and saying, yeah, that for any group to preserve itself, they need to have their own places to live. If you don't have that, you guys are gone.
You know, I've been asked about something about it. I did an interview with Red Ice and Lana Lochteff, and the interview was edited, and I don't listen to interviews once they're done. I don't know what was edited and what wasn't. With that being said, I've been asked, are Muslims dangerous one-on-one, or are they dangerous in groups? They're basically pack animals, in my opinion, unless you get a suicide bomber.
Right, yeah, that'll carpet an area.
But they're statistically pretty rare. It's pretty rare for a Muslim to strap a bomb on their chest. I mean, they're out there, it's happened, but let's face it, out of a billion Muslims, how many actually strap bombs on their chest and kill people every day? No, they're basically, you usually get a group of Muslim young kids, and that's where it becomes dangerous. It's always a group. It's a pack animal type thing. It's kind of like Africans. One-on-one, you know, no big deal. You get a group of them together, well, that's when problems start at clubs, problems can start anywhere.
What happens anytime you have two different groups are forced into the same living areas for long enough time. It's going to create conflict. You know,
sure.
The diversity, which is also a code word for white genocide, when diversity is pushed on a population, it destroys the area's cohesiveness. It destroys what's unique about both groups of people. But the reality is you end up creating a lot of conflict because of that. However, when you can openly talk about race and you can talk about white genocide, it makes it easier to discuss what our race needs in the future and stuff like that when you're having to deal with non-whites, because we have to deal with them at some point. All of our nations have been flooded with them.
Right. Well, typically I find the phenomenon, I've never really had a problem one-on-one with Africans for the most part. I mean, I'm talking about from a white male standpoint. I've never had a problem one-on-one with Muslims per se, and I've been exposed to a lot of them. The problems will come in if you get a beef with one and or get into speaking of beefs, we got beefcake here. You get into some type of issue with one, well, generally you're going to have a bunch of others show up, or they'll go get a bunch of others. That's where the problems arise. They're not one-on-one type creatures, that type of thing. They don't really operate that way.
And I haven't had to deal with any, really the most of the arguments or fights or spats that anyone gets into when talking about white genocide usually are with, white traitors.
Yeah.
That's what I find. Most
of the Muslims are fascinated by pro-white issues. I find blacks can be fascinated by pro-white issues, especially if you're not blaming them. Like a lot of what happens with white genocide, they assume you're blaming non-whites for white genocide. We're not blaming them at all.
We explain this as coming from anti-white traitors. Yeah. You know, a lot of times they sure. settle down a bit and they're willing to listen because they realize that you're not saying anything nasty about their race. And I also wanted to add in that just because we might be saying these cultural things about dealing with Muslims is that it doesn't mean they're necessarily your friend either. It does not make them pro-white just because they're openly anti-Semitic. Those two things are not mutually inclusive. You know, being pro-white and white is a separate thing entirely. No. And I mean, and yes, you
well,
know,
yeah, we don't know. We don't know what's been let into our countries. The Muslims let in that came out of the Lebanese situation of the 80s or whatnot. The wars over there are a totally different variety than what's been let in post September 11, 2001, in my opinion. But they're dealing with, we don't know what's here. And they're obviously quite, anytime you're shipping people around the world like that, and you're trying to create a blended humanity in only white countries, you're entering a dangerous situation. And at the same time, of course, these kids go to the same schools and the same schools that blame white people for all the problems. And that's where a lot of the problems come in.
Yeah, the people for all the problems in the world that they want to live with.
Exactly. Well, but that's the contradiction. That's a contradiction.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, that unravels the other terminology is that pointing out all the contradictions. You know, the one thing I've noticed with the mantra and with, you know, just talking about white genocide in general is that it's all very consistent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always very, you know, we just use a machine gun. We carpet bomb. Doesn't mean you can't snipe. The problem is that, you know, right now in Western civilization, some places you can't snipe without going to jail. You can't use sniper terms like Jew. And even when you can, you know, it's not necessarily accurate to say every single one against us is a Jew. It's not necessarily true, although there's a lot of them there. There's no doubt about that. Is there anything else you want to add?
I'm trying to think of anything else to add. I think it's been pretty well covered.
We don't do the 20-point or 12-point plans like these kids on Stormfront. We let them do that. I believe it's kind of like the Internet. The Internet was an open system solution to the big three media. Now, I remember back, way back when I was reading all these solutions to our pro-white media problems prior to the invention of the Internet. There was all these 12-point plans, 20-point plans. People were always coming up with, well, this is a solution to the Jewish control of the media. And they were always coming up with a solution. But before you know it, the Internet came out, and it just basically destroyed all those 20-point plans, and it destroyed the particular conventional media. Now we got our own media. Now they want to come up with 20-point plans or 12-point plans because we got a lot of issues. It's a natural tendency for whites in advanced planning to do all this kind of planning, and they want to come up with some complete program. We don't do that necessarily. I believe personally that our solution will not come out of the existing paradigm. Like the Internet never came out of the existing paradigm of the big three media. Our solution will be something we haven't seen. It'll come out of nowhere. It's fine to do the 20-point plans, but I ain't even bothering with it anymore. We'll let the upper class pro whites do all that. We'll just stick to seeding memes.
And the thing is, the more those memes seed, the more intelligent people are going to be drawn to the message as well. Or as they become aware of the situation, you know, there's better minds out there just waiting for it that are working on other problems right now. They can figure out how to solve this equation once they're aware that the equation is there.
The way you build a crew is we built it under an anonymous model. Now, I'm not anonymous. Everyone knows I'm Tim Murdoch, but Beefcake's not actually anonymous either, but the way you build things under anonymous model is sooner or later with our stuff, as whites start defending themselves more and more, it'll go from being anonymous to mainstream, no one's anonymous. That's how this works. It's not quite a true Samizdat model because they're not putting us in jail for saying the mantra yet in America. With that being said, in this particular equation, we are going to we're going to end up in an interesting scenario here, and that scenario is ongoing, and Bugs needs to be aware of it. Is these overwhelming trends, underlying trends, that are what they are. They are what they are. Anti-Semitism is, you know, if you walk around treating yourself like an angel, sooner or later everyone's going to wake up and treat you like a devil. That's how the world really works, because angels and devils aren't real. They're just people, good, bad, evil, whatnot. And the Jews post-World War II have been allowed to do everything, and they basically destroyed themselves.
I almost wonder if that wasn't strategic in the first place, because
well, it would have to be supernatural.
There, I've seen some very, very obnoxious Jews. And the reality is, if you have someone that has a tendency to be obnoxious in what they do, just do whatever they want to do, you're essentially, you're giving them enough runway to go right off the edge. You know, yeah. That's what happens. And it would be a strategic thing to do, to give somebody control of the media if you know they have a great tendency to stick their foot in their mouth.
Yeah. Our objective is to impose terminology as we do that. And of course, we never ever want to appeal, never once to ever appeal to anyone, anywhere. We always want to attract. You attract with propaganda, you attract with message, and you don't want to try to do too much. I know there's a lot of conflict right now in pro-white circles between the Daily Stormers and, well, actually it's between others and the Daily Stormer, because I haven't seen Andrew Engel pick any fights, but typically, you know, if you attract a lot of people for whatever reason, they're doing something correctly. If you can't attract people to get things done, you're doing something poorly. And there's two different schools of thought in pro-whites. There's a lot of people out there that want to educate. They want to be upper class. They want to be the professors and educate. I have no problems with that. And there's others that want to come in and do propaganda type things and seed memes. And that's, in my opinion, it's all necessary. It wouldn't be there. There's others that want to do the 20-point plan, big picture planning. I don't do any of that anymore. I think it's a waste of my time, because the solution isn't going to involve that plan anyways, whatever plan I cook up. I'm sure I cook up a good one once or twice. But, you know, the things we do are a little bit different. And when you're different, well, it's good and it's bad. But generally speaking, what we do works, and we're going to keep doing it. But in the next little segment, I'm going to let Beefcake wrap it up, and I'm going to carry on a little segment, and I'm going to put it in there about what pro-whites need to know about the things I've talked about on Follow the White Rabbit, In-Game Exotica, because I got some pretty interesting interviews scheduled for In-Game Exotica, and I want to make sure you guys have the right question to ask. And I'll let you go ahead, Beefcake, and I'll give them the question.
All right, fantastic. I've got I'm always trying to jump in with something to say. It's my part of my personality traits. I like to talk. Anyway, one thing I wanted to add to that is that when you're in a situation where now coming down the pipe at us, anti-Semitism is going to get popular again. And this is going to be very strange for a lot of the traditional pro-whites to be all of a sudden in that kind of environment. And the other thing followed with that is people being very comfortable talking about race. And as those two things kind of explode, everyone's going to want to say everything they've been wanting to say about race for a long time. Well, what do we do as a team? Those people who are talking about white genocide. And if you're talking about white genocide, I consider you on the same team, regardless of what you want to call it. If you want to call it the swarm, call it anything else. If you're bringing up the concept of white genocide and you're spreading that meme around, what do we do when everyone is apparently saying anti-Semitic things and they also happen to be talking about race? We hold the line. And what that means is we continue the message of white genocide.
Yeah, when people ask me, well, when you say anti-white, you mean the Jews? I'm like, no, I want them all. I'm all anti-white. I just don't want the Tim Weisses. I want them all.
We want them all, including the traitors.
Exactly.
And the other thing is, what's the major issue we're facing with race? When everyone wants to talk about race, they're going to talk about the things they don't like about having to live with a bunch of Somalians or having to live with a bunch of black people or a bunch of Hispanic people or a bunch of Asian people or whatever. But the important thing to keep bringing up, it's not the irritating things about having to live with another group of people that have different values and just different behaviors. The big issue is white genocide. It creates a situation that leads to a world where more white children are being born.
Now, I'm going to say something controversial to some Bugsers, to a minority of Bugsers. Can you be pro-white and be philo-Semitic, Horace? No. No. The trends are way against you. Even if you were just a blatant opportunist, you'd want to be a pro-white and an anti-Semite. You can't be. You cannot be a philo-Semite in Iraq where Beefcake was at, it was stationed. You cannot be a phyllosemite in Dearborn, Michigan. That's really what you're asking me. It doesn't exist. Even the phyllosemites are not phyllosemites, according to Gilead Otzman, who's Jewish from Israel. So no, that isn't going to work. What's going to be funny is there are pro-white circles that are kind of phyllosemitic, and they're going to become laughingstocks if they don't watch it. If they don't watch it. You really got to watch this type of stuff because overwhelming trends, you know, these giant tidal waves can either create opportunities or they can crush you. But this is totally ridiculous. You know, you don't have to walk around saying Jew, 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 Jew. At the same time, you shouldn't back down when someone calls you out. That's clearly, it's clearly ethnic. Kind of like Tim Weiss talking about, you know, his children look like Aryans, and you know, this typical type of Jewish stereotype, which they fulfill from time to time. You mentioned that. So it isn't one thing or another. It's just I'm just giving you the facts. Do with them what you will. We don't control who posts the mantra. I've always said that if we could get a million blacks as they jump their boats to from Africa to Europe, which is probably happening right this minute, if we could get them all to wear White Rabbit Radio t-shirts or Bugs t-shirts and hold up signs, you know, Asia for the Asians, Africa for the Africans, white countries for everybody, I'd do it. We'd call them a black swarm. I'm not going to let them run my website or anything, but I think it would be hilarious because it's true. It's true, but at the same time, you know, you have to differentiate in this type of thing. If you're using a machine gun, you better understand that you're going to have to pick apart everything coming over that barbed wire. And there's going to be a few Jews there.
Yeah, and you can't be in love with someone that has promoting your genocide, or even a group of people that happen to be very unpopular that are, you know, tied to some very anti-white things when everyone else is talking about Jews. And you have people that aren't even pro-white that are going
to
be sounding
anti-Semitic. You're not going to be effective if you're afraid of calling someone just because he's a Christian and you like him. If you're afraid of calling him anti-white, you're not going to be effective. You're not going to be effective in the long run if you're afraid of someone just because they're Jewish and you're afraid to, you know, you're afraid to go there. Because they're always, these anti-white idiots are always going to take you where you're afraid to go. And the great thing about, the reason our messages got out there, and the reason the enemy fears us for one reason alone, we're willing to do what it takes to get out a message, and we're willing to go the distance based on the current trends in the underlying society. You know, you want Hitler, I'll give you anti-racist Hitler. We'll get out the message that way. We're willing to do this, and I'm willing to talk about anything, period. So is the Beefcake. So are others. But where you become ineffective is like, well, I'm not comfortable calling him anti-white because he's a good Christian or what. No. It doesn't work that way. You're either pro-white or anti-white. We may have a line in the sand. We only do one division in the social space. We don't do any division among pro-whites. We don't do any division among anti-whites. It's like a war. In psychological warfare, you're dealing with warfare. Warfare means you got us and the enemy. We're the pro-whites. They're the anti-whites. Period. That's how that works. I mean, you don't sit around and ask people in your foxhole, you know, well, he's a good Christian. I really can't call him out. You know, he's throwing grenades at us for the enemy. Well, no, it doesn't work that way.
You don't respect
him. Well, he's a Jew. We got to be quiet. No. It doesn't work that way.
if they're a Jew and they want to get obnoxious on you, you go right ahead and you call them an anti-white. And if they say, are you an anti-Semite, if it's legal to do so, yeah, I am an anti-Semite. If I disagree with white genocide and anti-Semites don't like that, they'll call me an anti-Semite. These days, an anti-Semite is anybody who Jews don't like.
Yeah, basically, that's one way to do it. I say anyone that disagrees with you is an anti-Semite. And yes, you're Jewish. You're calling me an anti-Semite because I disagree with you. I don't care. It only takes someone to do that at a very large level, and the person that'll do it won't be anyone connected to us directly, unless someone gets lucky, and it can explode the whole entire thing because everyone realizes it's like a dam breaking. It's what's going to happen, and what's occurring right now.
I wanted to mention one other thing too.
Okay,
and that's that. Because we are there are essentially two camps that exist. There's pro-white or anti-white. And if you're indifferent to your own genocide, well, then I'm going to consider you anti-white, because indifference to the destruction of your own people is morally wrong, too. And it's also supporting that. It's complacency in it. That's not cool either. And so to those that want to ask, why does the future of your race matter to you and stuff like that? Hey, that's an anti-white statement. Saying I should be indifferent to the destruction of my own people is anti-white. And as far as us being the two camps, there's the pro-white camp as well. And you're going to get people that are pro-white that are going to stick their foot in their mouth from time to time. And it's hard for people to talk for any length of time without saying something incorrect. You know, it happens to anyone who talks for any length of time. Monologuing is not always easy, and sometimes you will say something as you're trying to think of something else, and it's not exactly right. The way you wanted it to sound. But all of our allies, everyone that's on our side that are pro-white, if they're talking about white genocide and they're bringing up the meme and they're talking about anti-whites and they're talking about mass immigration and forced integration, I'd like to offer them some leniency for any foot-and-mouth moments, because I know a lot of people that want to talk about this. One thing they're concerned about is losing the approval of their peers if they stick their foot
in. Or making a mistake. Yeah, we're not here for – yeah, don't worry about making a mistake. Just do the best you can do. We analyze the world.
Someone does make a mistake, lenience.
We analyze the world based on the anti-white proposition. There can be no all-white countries anywhere, and there can be no all-white areas in the formerly all-white countries. And you can really analyze everything. In fact, you can ask the rabbinical, you can answer the great rabbinical question, are Jews white, based on the anti-white proposition. If Jews were white, they wouldn't have their own home in Israel, exclusively to themselves. If Jews were white, they wouldn't be able to kick out illegal immigrants. Jews, the state of Israel kicks out illegal immigrants, and they kick them out to white countries. It's true. So we can answer all the pressing questions of the time with the anti-white proposition. It's true. You get this if you own a website. You actually get every once in a while you have a Jew writing it. Well, I get attacked for being white. And if you move to Israel, you're never going to get attacked for being white. They'll attack you for being a Jew, but they're not going to attack you for being white. But there are young Jews walking around Western civilization. They get attacked. If they're not wearing a yarmulke, they probably get attacked for being white by non-whites. And this is the type of thing you're dealing with in this society. Everything's about Jews, Jews, Jews. But we got to stick to the basics: pro-white versus anti-white, and the anti-white proposition, which is all-encompassing.
Absolutely.
A la the mantra.
Yeah.
Anything else?
If you want to talk about it, we keep bringing it back to white genocide. That's another thing, too. If you're going to talk about something for a length of time, you do got to go into other subjects, because the mantra is designed to be concise.
Yeah.
So that means that if you want to be able to keep the audience entertained and keep bringing up that concept, you just have to be able to tie it back to the concept of white genocide.
We always tend to argue within the confines of the framework of the anti-white proposition or the mantra. Even when answering the question on Jews white, you notice that I answer it within the confines of the anti-white proposition or the mantra. That is a tendency. Bugs are a tendency, and that is a good thing because it helps everything stay on message. At the same time, if you're talking on a show for 2 hours, you might have to – I don't care if you have to talk about Nazi UFO – whatever you have to talk about to entertain them, because, hey, whatever. You got to talk about World War II revisionism? Whatever. I've had to do it all. Whatever. Just learn, find a way to carry it back over or connect it to white genocide, because I assure you, everything's connected to white genocide. Everything in the universe. If there's aliens coming to this planet, it's because of white genocide.
They're wondering why there's one particular group of humans that has to share all of their land with other groups of humans while the other ones are allowed to have exclusive places to live.
Exactly. We're going to get evacuated. No. But in the next little phase, I'm going to answer a question in very simple terms. I'm going to talk about something. Very important, and Beefcake knows the answer, my particular opinion on this, but it's very important for those conventional pro-whites that don't understand one particular thing. In my opinion, they're not asking the big question. The question that I'm going to give you is there a Moses? And we're going to talk about, is there a Moses? Because you're not dealing with a Jew, you're dealing with the Jew. And you're dealing with it in a way you're not accustomed to. Groups that wage war by deception and don't put tea cozies on their head and sit in the planet of the earth announcing they wage war by deception, unless you're looking to get obliterated. It doesn't really work very good. But there's always been a speculative theory, and I'm going to put it in very plain language. I've been asked some very simple questions. I'm going to answer it in very simple language. I don't know necessarily have the full answer, but I know the direction to take you. And, we have pretty much some fascinating things going on genetically. We have a fascinating thing going on genetically. And when you deal with our enemy at the top, they are overwhelmed by their own mythology. And especially when, let's go back into the Jew equation since we just talked about it. You're dealing with the Old Testament. In the Old Testament, something becomes quite clear. You got the Israelites, you got a priest class, and you got Moses. And Moses holds all the cards. Forget about the supernatural for a minute. Moses is a badass of the Old Testament. He holds all the cards. He is brutal. And he's a survivor. The question is there a Moses faction? And I'm going to answer that, and I'm going to put you on the path. I'm going to basically give you the questions, and that is the question. I'm going to speculate a little bit on this subject as Beefcake hangs up here in a minute. Anything else you want to say, Beefcake?
Well, I want to say is if there is a grand poobah of anti-whites in the mix,
it would be the grand poobah
pro-whites out there too.
It would be the red hippo, the grand poobah, the king pink rabbit, the king. It would be the super Jew. Which will probably be the ultimate meme, the super Jew. In other words,
if he's out there, we got a big friend out there too. That's the optimistic thing about that.
There you go. Well, yeah, but you know, there's always been this speculation because of all the crazy maneuvers going on in the world. You've got the Saudis, the House of Saud, who's now committed. Basically, they basically put on the suicide vest, the suicide bomber vest. In the oil markets, you have the stuff that makes no sense at all with Vladimir Putin. We're gonna give you the guys the questions to ask because, and it's a question I've never seen. I've never seen anyone on any of the forums ask the simple question: are you dealing with a group within a group? If you got a priest class, and you do, that dates back to the Middle East in a very interesting time period based on Y chromosomes. We're gonna talk about this. Then you might actually have Moses, and Moses might be the problem here. Besides the regular local rabbi, you might have a group within a group. And that's the question, is there a Moses here? What is the real deal going on with this Moses stuff? And we're going to answer that. I'm going to speculate for a minute and give you guys a question. It only takes about 10 minutes to give you an overview. There's something that's went on during our lifetimes right in front of our face, along with white genocide. And we're going to talk about that. But Beefcake, I'm going to let you go. It was good talking to you. We're going to do this again.
It's fantastic. I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of this. So,
well, we're gonna, it's only later. About another tip. You've already heard it before, but I'm going to talk in very plain language. Very simple connections for any pro.
I like
to
simple
make.
Connections.
Because this group, in my opinion, if there is, they're the ones that okayed our genocide. I don't care what anyone says. You know, the Israelites don't do anything without Moses stamping it. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And there's some interesting coincidences post-World War II. I know we know who's behind the Immigration Act of 65. We don't know who's behind some stuff in Northern Europe. We know who owns the media. We know who pushes stuff. But there's some unanswered questions. But this is the big question. And we're going to go into some things right in front of our face. And it'll take about 10 minutes. And Beefcake can listen to it after the fact. Okay, Beefcake, I'm going to let you go, buddy.
All right.
And I'll talk to you again. We'll be doing this again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. So all over the world, we have this Jewish question. And most of the planet has actually answered the thing. But there's some white holdouts. More and more of them will be coming over the lines. Anti-Semitism is going to go full-blown Dearborn, Michigan. But the Jewish question is not the question pro-whites should be asking, because you already know the answer. Maybe educate on it, do whatever you want to do. The real question on the Jewish side of the equation is not the Jewish question. It's the Moses question. Is there a Moses? Yeah, that's the question. Most of you guys have heard terms like black nobility. You've heard terms like the Vipers of Venice. You've heard terms like maybe even the Merchant of Venice, of course, as well. And you know about the Merchants of Venice. The Vipers of Venice you've never heard of, maybe, some of you. Some of you heard of one and not the other. You've heard these phrases over and over again. Black nobility. All of these different phrases they use for this group supposedly in power behind the Jews or instead of the Jews. In fact, most of the alt news will not refer to the Jews as having any power. They're like a little knockoff group, a make-believe knockoff group. I believe that's inaccurate. I think you could pretty much put the label Jews on the whole thing. The problem is, the challenge becomes dangerous for pro-whites if there's a Moses in the mix. And this is a speculative question, but it's a very important speculation. Because right in front of your face, someone's doing a little voodoo. On one side of the equation, they trace back the Cohen, the priest class, which is a Y chromosome. To get into Israel, that's an X chromosome. X chromosomes are only carried by the female, or females only carry the X chromosome. Males carry a Y and an X chromosome. So to trace a Y chromosome in a male, to find out an ancient father, you have to trace it down the male lines. You can't trace it down the female lines at all. So to get into Israel, you've got to have that X chromosome, whatever they're looking at. And that's a speculation within itself. Going way back. But the Cohen priest class, the study came out that they traced back the Y chromosome through the males. And it can only be traced through the males. So they're looking at something totally different. And it dates back to a very controversial time, a real time in the Middle East. Okay, at the same time, they found a Cohen priest class. Now, if you know anything about our enemy's mythology, the Old Testament, true or false, whether you like it or hate it, whatever, I'm not getting into that, and we're not talking about anything supernatural. We're just doing a Roberto, or a Revello Oliver. Revello Oliver was a character that used our enemy's mythology consistently and looked at it as a modus operandi. And if you look at the Old Testament as a modus operandi, something becomes quite clear. You have Israelites, you have a very powerful priest class, but you have a super Jew, what I will call the super Jew for the pro-whites. Moses is a super Jew. Forget about the supernatural, forget about the God. Forget about all that for a second. We're just talking about Moses, priests, Israelites. The power is all in the Moses faction. Moses has all the cards. If he wants you gutted, you're gutted. If you're dead, you're dead. Moses is the only, if there's a God in this equation, Moses is the only one that he cares about, and anything that descends from Moses is the only thing he cares about. He doesn't care about anything else. When Moses makes the great escape from Egypt, what is it, 80-90% of the Israelites get wiped out. There's a message for you there. Moses only cares about Moses. Now the question becomes, if you have a priest class that can date itself genetically, just like the Jews date themselves genetically to get into Israel, or quantify themselves genetically to get into Israel, we have a Cohen priest class that quantifies themselves genetically, identified by a Y chromosome going back in time, might not there be a Moses? Oh, that's a good question. What is the answer? We don't know for sure. But there's someone out there that wants us to believe that there's a Moses, potentially, for some type of move that they may or may not be making. Again, this is speculative. But at the same time, we have a Cohen priest class dating itself to a fascinating time period in the Middle East. We have another fascinating phenomenon of the 20th century. What phenomenon do we have of the 20th century coming out of the Middle East that white pro-whites, many pro-whites have argued half their lives about? With the Negroes, King Tut. Oh, we got this young prince. In the history of Egypt, he means nothing other than some people out of London found all his loots. But he does mean something. He's significant. He's even significant in the arguments coming out of the Third Reich. You see, the Third Reich has given up, the Germans gave up everything from the Third Reich, as far as we could tell, from a pro-white perspective, except one thing, the bust of Nefertiti. See, King Tut's mother was never Nefertiti. This is what's interesting. King Tut's mother ends up being Akhenaten's sister. Akhenaten ends up being King Tut's father. Oh, I want you to look up the dating of Akhenaten when he came to power, the controversy he caused in Egypt, his escape from Egypt over into, guess where, Palestine, which was another Egyptian territory. Look up Manetho on the Hyksos. Look up the dating. And then look up the Cohen Y chromosome and date that. The question becomes, is there a Moses? That's the Jewish question now. The black nobility, the vipers from Venice, all they're talking about in simple language is there a super Jew? A group that wages war by deception will never put a tea cozy on their heads, walk out into the middle of the earth, and announce to the world vis-a-vis Mossad that they're waging war by deception. Because after about a decade or two, you're not going to be fooling anyone. No one on this planet is being fooled except a handful of Christian Zionists that are dwindling in number by the day. That's it. It's all they're fooling. And some Fox News watchers. And that number will be dwindling by generation, because most of the next generations are getting their stuff online. It's a little bit different. It's funny. If you look up the term white supremacist on Twitter, you're going to see most white supremacists attached with Jews, because most of the world assumes Jews are white. In fact, most of our race assumes Jews are white. I argue within the confines of the anti-white proposition, so I don't have a problem answering that. I don't have to sit here and educate. If Jews were white, they wouldn't have a country of their own. But with that being said, I'm not into education like some of you, but those of you that are out there educating, the Revello Olivers would be asking one question over and over again. Is there a Moses? Because right now, genetically, we know Jews are identifying themselves to get into Israel genetically. We know that the Cohen priest class is identifying themselves vis-a-vis Y chromosome to a very controversial time in the Middle East. We now have another set of memes being driven down your throat. Ah, you know, King Tut's black. No, not he's black. Now he's at least part white. Well, Obama's part white. Obama was announced as the new King Tut when he arrived in Egypt, whatever that means. Now, do I think King Tut's Indo-European? I have no doubt that he's part Indo-European. I could get on these memes all day long. These particular different projections they're putting out down different avenues about this controversial time in Egypt. But if you have a Cohen priest class that can identify vis-a-vis science, and if you have an Israelite nowadays, to get back into Israel, you can identify yourself based on some maternal ancestor, some X chromosome going way back, then might you have a Moses? And I'm not saying the Moses is sitting as your local mechanic. I'm not saying he's even sitting as your local CEO or anything like that. No, you're dealing with a whole nother business here. You're dealing with a group that wages war by deception. So don't assume you know everything about this group just because you can identify a Voxman. Yeah, Moses will gut them alive if Moses is real. In fact, if Moses is real, he'll probably destroy 80 to 90% of them to make his next great escape. Now, can you pin Moses down with the term anti-white? Yeah. You pretty much, if there's a Moses in this equation, and again, this is speculative, but this is the question. If you ask the right questions, you're bound to have the right answers. Time after time, many pro-whites have written about the top of the English-speaking world, why they're so damn cozy with the Jews. Well, Moses commands the Israelites. So if there's a Moses, he's at the top of the English-speaking world projecting himself across the West. There can be no argument there if there's a Moses. And he ain't calling himself Moses yet. His memes are there. King Tut's in the mix. And there's something strange about this kid, too. There's something very strange about his father. His father does some stuff that no one's ever done. You know, he invented monotheism and polytheism in one fell swoop. He created all the conflict. And we could go on that all day long. Many believe he's the first Bolshevik. Many believe him to be the original Moses. Or their Moses in their mythology. Whatever. The question, could a group like that genetically hang together? Well, I don't know. I don't know. Could a Cohen priest class genetically hang together? Yes. Could whites genetically hang together? Well, we were around the same time. We just don't know our history. We're just still trying to figure things out. So the question is there a Moses? If there is, he's getting ready to make probably a pretty good size move. And don't be surprised if he doesn't wipe out a whole lot of things trying to make it. Because these guys are well entrenched, and they're household names. Many of you think of them as Shabbos goys, big WASP, big white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. Yeah, they're wasps. They're just being taken to school by those evil Jews. If there's a Moses, that's what he wants you to believe. That's his game. And he's running a totally different racket. Totally different racket. But that's the question. Is there a Moses? Because Moses holds all the cards. Yeah, Moses will shut down the ADL. He can give one word and do that. He's Moses. Yeah, read their mythology. He's God. Or the next best thing. But that's the question right now. Because if there's a Moses, he hasn't revealed himself in anything but meme. And he's revealed some pretty interesting memes all this century to set this up, which is almost supernatural. It's like Kevin McDonald talks about Jewish success being supernatural. Well, they have a lot of failures post-September 11, 2001 that become very visual. The collapse of Lehman Brothers and MBF Global. They've had some problems with their, you know, financial speculation. When you look at the Jewish elite, their success almost becomes mythical. But they've had some problems right in front of our face. Things are starting to fall pieces for Zionism. But again, Moses could easily break Zionism in half, get rid of 80-90% of them, and big ball keep on rolling. Most of you guys, most of the pro-whites, would let him walk on by because they just assume he's Shabbos Goy. And 2,000 years from now, he'll lay those Jew eggs, and the super Jew will have a whole nother crew. That's how they work. Well, I mean, if he wiped out 80-90% coming out of Egypt, and if you read Manetho on the Hyksos, you're going to realize when Akhenaten escaped from Egypt, a great deal of the Hyksos were wiped out in the process. So I just think it's interesting. Well, then, of course, big ball keep on rolling. The question is there a super Jew? Is there a Moses? It's not anything supernatural. It's just Aryans do not do deception. We don't wage war by deception. Groups that wage war by deception put another group, ideal concept like Zionism at spear point. They use that to drive into the planet. Then when the planet screams out in pain, they shatter it into a million pieces. And then right then, they make their appeal. They move forward. See, the Avoxmans of the world, they don't really wage war by deception all that well. Yeah, they put the Africans at spear point. You know, Africans were at spear point. They use Africans. They use civil rights. They drove into America. They run their game, but they never break the spears. They don't know how. It's like Kevin McDonald says, Dr. McDonald says, they know how to achieve power, but they don't know how to maintain power. But if there's a Moses, you're dealing with a totally different animal. And his survival would be, well, fascinating. Fascinating. But this is the question. And if something like that's around, can you pin him down with white genocide? Yeah. Yeah. And he'll go a few rounds of survival. But he's going to have a few moves, and those moves are going to be based on technology they've had that they've been waiting to use. King Tut himself, I mean, I haven't seen any pro-whites discuss this. I'm never on any thread, on Stormfront, any of these vaulted forums where everyone knows the Jewish question, ask the real question, is there a Moses? In very simple terms, is there a super Jew? Lay those eggs. I don't have the answer to, and he's not going to reveal himself, and it's more than one. There's a coalition of these, if so, by now. They're not going to reveal themselves to the very end. Might it just be some elites looking to pad their DNA so that they can justify their elite status? That's a possibility as well. But that's, in my opinion, that is way too much Judaized for even me. But that's a possibility. It's all speculation. But if you have the right questions, you'll get the right answers. If you're asking a broad question, you could let a narrow group walk right on by because they ain't wearing teak cozies. And remember, Moses hands down the Talmud, not the other way around. Yeah. So that is the question. Is there a Moses? But what's interesting about the King Tut, one last thing I'll say, is there's a museum being built on the Giza Plateau. It's a museum to King Tut. Most people don't know about it. It's the largest, one of the largest museums to ever be built on the planet, the largest thing to be built on the Giza Plateau since the Giza Pyramids. And most haven't even discussed this. This pyramid, of course, wasn't supposed to be done for at least a decade or two from now. But post-September 11th, 2001, they sped that up. That thing, basically, they've been moving stuff in since 2011. And most people don't even know about this. This massive museum to this kid, who's basically insignificant. But getting back to the Germans and the Third Reich, I've been asked one question. Did the Third Reich ever discuss the question of there is a Moses? Well, the main sleuth, as I call him, and I would never get along with this guy because he's so damn anti-white, but being an anti-white academic is kind of like a cliche. You know, some of these guys need to get original, like the Dr. McDonald's. At least McDonald's, not anti-white, but Joseph P. Farrell does one thing, and one thing he can do, but he will never do it because of the controversial cause, and he knows pro-whites will use it, is the direct quotes out of the Third Reich, and there's not a dozen, whoever asked me this, it's not a dozen quotes dealing with the question of there is a Moses. It's about a half dozen in German that can be translated from some famous names about what they're dealing with. They already knew about the Jews. They were looking at the structure. And, of course, you have some of these elements that are largely suspicious of being the Moses faction infiltrating the Third Reich, and the Third Reich, of course, got annihilated inside and out. Yeah, something happened. Something went wrong, obviously. Yeah. Saboteurs? Moses. The super Jew. I don't know. It's still speculative, but yes, there are quotes coming from the Third Reich that would raise more than a few eyebrows. What you're hearing in this particular one, what you're hearing is over at GizaDeathStar.com, and they're anti-white, but what he will do is talk about this faction, and he calls them the Vipers of Venice. He calls them under code names. I'm calling them Super Jews. And what he's doing is giving out direct quotes in German and translating them from the Third Reich. They would have to be studied by pro-whites, and studied from those that we could trust, and then at that time, we could come out with them, but that'll probably... He's one of the foremost researchers that could reveal a lot about the Old Testament, a lot about our enemy structures, if he chose to do so. But I wouldn't hold my breath. The best you can do is what you're hearing, which is on his pay-per-view part. He's talking about this group, and he's talking about what some elements in the Third Reich talked about in German, basically answering this question. And yes, there are elements in the Third Reich. To put it bluntly, there are elements of the Third Reich that believed there was a Moses. But you have to understand, and they believed it would be their arch enemy. You know, there was not, post-World War II, we can answer all the genetic questions. Prior to World War II, you can't answer any genetic question. Modern genetics came about post-World War II, early 80s, 90s, and to date. Now, many believe the elite were a decade to two to three ahead behind the scenes. While that's not unheard of in military-industrial complex terms, I don't know about genetics. That is somewhat speculative, but I'm going to venture to say they know their genetics. Before they released anything to us, they definitely studied it themselves. I think we can all conclude that. But you have to understand, the Third Reich, they did something quite interesting. And the only remnant of the Third Reich is the bust of Nefertiti. Everything else is destroyed, which is kind of interesting. And Nefertiti doesn't end up being King Tut's father. King Tut's mother, I'm sorry. It ends up being Akhenaten and Akhenaten's sister. So the question isn't, what did the Germans know? The question is, when did they know it? And this is significant, because someone is spending a lot of money on the King Tut meme, and there has to be a reason, and it has very little, I'm sorry, it has very little to do with him being white, or they would have came out with that from the beginning. Yeah. I think it's a very fascinating speculative question. Is there a Moses? You definitely want to be asking the right questions, because these guys are all systems go now, one of their pie-in-the-sky scenarios. Historically, their pie-in-the-sky scenarios have never came to fruition. But they appear to be going gangbusters across the board. They're unleashing everything they have, into some larger and larger scenario. Whether it'll collapse on them, or whether we'll get the final answer, we'll get it one way or another. But definitely be aware of it. Even if you're out there educating on the Jews, doing your Jew thing, the real question isn't the Jewish question, because it's already been answered. The real question, even them having their own country, makes them non-white. I mean, if they were white, they wouldn't have their own country. Whites are never allowed to have their own countries. Whites aren't allowed to kick out illegal immigrants. So we can answer it within the confines of the mantra all day long. But the question is, do you have a super Jew? Because if he walks by, he's going to lay those eggs again. Yes, he is, because he's done it before. He's a survivor. And it's not just one, it's a coalition, it's a crew, it's a group of gangsters. And, it's a question. What's the answer? It's speculative. It's still speculative. It comes out of the Third Reich, and we're keeping on going. But it's something that I'm largely suspicious on why, more and more aren't answering this. So I'll just put it out there. That's what we're talking about with Pink Rabbit, Leasters, and Banksters. In plain terms, if you listen to any extent, is there a super Jew? Is there a Moses? Because Moses holds all the cards. A group within a group. That in-group is definitely going to hold all the cards, and it has very little to do with Abe Foxman. Although he's just a component. He's a very vocal component. He's a critical component to carrying out tasks. The Israelites are always critical to carrying out tasks for Moses. But if there's a Moses, that's a game changer. That's a game changer in the way most pro-whites would look at this group and think. It would also answer a lot of the questions for the crazy geopolitics we're seeing. If you're dealing with just Abe Foxman, then the questions regarding Russia and some of these BRICS questions and Putin questions become, he just looks like another stoolie. If you're asking questions about a Moses and a Moses faction, then the Medvedevs, then the Jews, then you've got to play a whole different game. A group within a group, you're going to have to fight a totally different way. When a group is truly waging war by deception, you're going to have to fight a totally different way than any type of conventional tactics, at least until the end. And so this is the question right now. Is there a Moses? Because Moses is a game changer. Moses would answer a lot of questions geopolitically if there's a faction within a faction. They're pushing a negotiation on some level. Trying to get around the fall of Zionism, which they know is coming and they plan on using as the spear point. Again, Zionism would be at spear point. They're going to break the spear and then roll out some bigger agenda to stay in power, to survive. Forget about the Jews. Put them on a train to Auschwitz. We don't care. 80-90% of them, whatever. That's been done before, hasn't it? So that is the question. Is there a Moses? The answer? That's forthcoming. It'll be forthcoming one morning. Just be ready. Be ready for the question. And we'll keep this conversation going. But this is H. Avenger. You've been listening to another Fall of the White Rabbit with Beefcake. And just seeding the questions to be asked. Is there a Moses? We'll find out. White Rabbit Radio.